It's Marcia French, it's Thursday, August 27th, and it's time for news from the Yuma Sun. I'm your volunteer reader at Sun Sounds of Arizona, and as usual, I'll have some weather, although it sounds a lot the same, local news, one obituary, I have sports, and we'll have time for most of a state news article. Starting with the weather, today, Thursday, the high should be 113 degrees, winds around 12 miles per hour out of the south. Friday, mostly sunny, 88 degrees for the low, 113 degrees for the high. Winds about the same. Saturday, the 29th, mostly sunny, 86 degrees, 110 for the high, 12 mile an hour winds. Sunny Sunday, 84 degrees to 107. And Monday, it's projected to be 105 degrees for the high, 82 degrees for the low. My first article, YPD releases numbers on where accidents occur. This is by Michael Maresch, Yuma Sun reporter from Tuesday. The Yuma Police Department has identified areas where crashes or accidents have been occurring most often over the last 2 years. A list provided to the Yuma Sun included any area with 10 or more accidents for the years 2024 and 2025. According to the list, most of the accidents were on the busier streets, likely because there is more traffic on those roads than residential streets. For 2024, the police department reported 20 accidents or crashes at 32nd Street and Avenue 3E near the fairgrounds, which is more than any other location where accidents tended to occur. Police statistics showed 18 accidents in the 200 block of East 16th Street in 2024, with 14 accidents, the third area with the most accidents in 2024, occurred on the 200 block of East 20th Street. Also for 2024, police reported 13 crashes in the 3200 block of South Avenue A, 12 crashes in the 1500 block of South Avenue, and 12 crashes in the 2400 block of West 16th Street. These areas showed a total of 89 accidents for that year. The number of accidents in 2025 jumped to 105 in areas where 10 or more crashes occurred, some close to the same areas as in 2024. In 2025, the 1400 block of East 16th Street had 18 accidents, the most of any location for the year, followed by 15 in the 300 block of West 16th Street. YPD reported 14 crashes for 2025 at both the 500 block of East 16th Street and the 1100 block of East 16th Street. In addition, for 2025, 13 accidents occurred in the 1600 block of South 4th Avenue, 11 in the 1500 block of South Avenue B, and 10 each in the 2300 block South 4th Avenue and 6500 block East 32nd Street. The statistics released by the police department do not indicate how many of these accidents caused serious injuries or fatalities, and whether or how many involved pedestrians or bicyclists. The Yuma City Council is in the process of adopting a road safety plan to look into ways to make streets safer. My next article, no incidents reported in Mexicali following alert by U.S. Embassy. This is a staff report from Tuesday. Mexicali police officers conduct an inspection operation in the past week. Police forces arrested numerous operators of criminal groups and made significant seizures of drugs and weapons, which, according to some sources, may have prompted the threat against public security offices in the city. The U.S. Embassy warned about a potential threat in Mexicali on Tuesday, prompting law enforcement agencies to increase security around the Civic Center, which houses municipal and state offices, as well as judicial facilities at both levels of government. On Tuesday, the embassy issued a security alert regarding alleged threats in Mexicali for Tuesday, but not provide additional details. It suggested several precautionary measures for U.S. citizens while in the city. As of the afternoon, security agencies had not reported incidents, nor had any evidence of a risk been made public. Unofficial reports in local media indicated an alleged criminal group known as the Los Rusos had reportedly threatened to attack government offices in Mexicali. Authorities neither confirmed nor denied the report. The municipal, state, and federal governments increased security at their public safety offices, and the federal judiciary headquarters closed for the day. In the morning, Mexico's security cabinet, which brings together the country's six public security institutions, issued a statement on the alert. Regarding the security alert issued by the U.S. Consulate General in Tijuana concerning a possible threat in Mexicali, Baja California, the security cabinet reports that, at this time, Mexican authorities have not identified any elements confirming a specific or imminent risk to the population. Through institutional cooperation mechanisms, the information continues to be exchanged with U.S. authorities to verify and promptly address any indication related to this alert. In Mexicali, particularly in rural areas, police forces have recently arrested operators of criminal cells and made substantial drug seizures. Last Thursday, federal forces seized nearly 120 kilograms of fentanyl pills from a residence in Mexicali. The Secretary of Security and Protection estimated that the seizure was equivalent to more than 4 million doses of the drug. The residence where the seizure occurred was reportedly linked to Los Rosas, the group operating on behalf of the Sinaloa cartel in the Baja California region and part of Sonora. Police agencies at all three levels of government in Mexicali confirmed to news media that surveillance and patrols had been increased throughout the city following the alert issued by the U.S. Embassy. Moving on, Yuma invites community to learn about infrastructure improvements plan. This is a staff report from Tuesday. The city of Yuma is inviting residents to learn more about its proposed infrastructure improvements plan and provide feedback during a community open house on Wednesday, September 9th, from 4 to 7 p.m. in room 190 at Yuma City Hall. The proposed plan identifies public facilities and infrastructure that may receive funding from development fees to serve future growth and development in the community, including potential projects related to city facilities, public safety, parks and recreation, and transportation. The plan is developed using the city's land use assumptions, which estimate future growth and the additional demand that any growth may place on city services. As part of the planning process, residents can review information about the proposed plan and potential projects during the open house, ask questions, and provide feedback for the city to consider. No formal presentation will take place, and residents may stop by at any time during the open house. Following the open house, feedback will be reviewed as the city and its consultant continue developing the planning documents and prepare for the formal adoption process required under state law. Under Arizona state law, cities may assess development fees on new developments to help pay for necessary public facilities needed to serve growth. Development fees may only be used for eligible projects identified in the city's adopted infrastructure improvements plan and cannot be used for routine maintenance or repairs to existing infrastructure. The proposed documents will be posted for public review at least 60 days before a public hearing, providing another opportunity for the community to review the infrastructure improvements plan and land use assumptions before the Yuma City Council considers adoption. If adopted, a separate public notice and hearing process will take place before the council considers proposed development fees. Any development fees adopted by the council would take effect 75 days after formal adoption. For more information, contact Dave Wostenberg, Director of Engineering, at 928-373-4520. My next article, Mental Competency Examination Scheduled for Kotlinski. This article was by Michael Maresch from Tuesday. A Yuma man charged, along with his wife, with 3 counts of sexual conduct with a minor, will undergo a mental competency exam to see if he can assist in his defense. The expert who will examine Ethan Kotlinski will determine whether he understands his rights, like the right to testify, and to be presumed innocent of the charge. According to documents for the court, the question is whether any mental illness substantially impairs his ability to have a factual and rational understanding of the consequences of pleading guilty. The person doing the examination will be paid $300 for a preliminary examination or $500 for full evaluation. The evaluation must be completed by September 11th. Court documents said the state wanted to talk to the victim about a proposed deal. On March 12th, the Yuma Police Department received information regarding a delayed sex offense, which allegedly occurred in the 1800 block of South Avenue B, involving a 13-year-old victim. The offense reportedly occurred earlier that week, and the suspect was defined as Kotlinski, 38. As the investigation unfolded over the weekend, his wife, Amanda Kotlinski, 31, was also implicated with the reported offenses. A status conference meeting for her is scheduled for August 31st. My next article, supporters urge voters to choose SWJH as the world's best school. This is by Cesar Nayoy Bajo El Sol, August 25th, which was Tuesday. Southwest Junior High is calling on area communities and the general public to vote for the San Luis School in the World's Best School Prizes competition. In June, T4 Education recognized SWJH as one of the 10 best schools in the world, launching the competition for the award, which is evaluated by a panel of experts on the Academy judging panel. The top 3 schools will be announced in November. SWHJ is competing in the Overcoming Adversity category against schools from Brazil, England, Lebanon, Turkey, Kenya, Ethiopia, and Somalia. The school's assistant principal, Michelle Nunez, explained in a post by SWJH that the competition includes voting for the Community Choice Award, which is open to people around the world. We've already shown how much we can accomplish together. Now let's show how strong the community's support for our school is, Nunez said in a video promoting the vote. On its website, T4 Education highlights Southwest Junior High for helping make higher education accessible to nearly 100% of its students, who are children of migrant workers with little or no access to financial aid. That mission is carried out through the early college program. Through an early college preparatory model that incorporates tutoring, guidance, and college-level learning beginning in elementary school, they are preparing students from underserved backgrounds to continue their education and pursue careers that once seemed out of reach. T4 Education's description of SWJH's nomination for the world's best school public vote states, "Votes for Southwest Junior High for the Community Choice Award can be cast online at vote.worldsbestschool.org, and then there will be a tab for Public Vote 26, and the entry number is 4350, or through the Gadsden Elementary School District website at gesd.org. My obituary notice today is Manuela H. Swayze, age 89, of Yuma. She passed away on August 17th. You're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona and bringing you news from the Yuma Sun. Moving to sports now, gearing up for the gridiron, Yuma Catholic excited for its second year in 5A, under new leadership. This article is by Braden Steele, Yuma Sun reporter from Tuesday. Yuma Catholic had new leadership last season for the first time since 2018, when longtime coach Rhett Stallworth retired and defensive backs coordinator Vernon Smith took over for the team. The Shamrocks went 7-5 in 2025 after the coaching change, a decline from their 11-2 2024 record. The program started the season 0-4, its worst in program history, but fought its way back and finished the season 7-1 and won their region before losing to Marana Yuma Catholic's first ever 5A playoff appearance. After the season concluded, Smith stepped down from the head coaching position and Marty Schetzel was given the job. Schetzel has over 40 years of experience coaching college football programs like the University of Arizona and Northern Arizona University, and has been with the Shamrocks as their lineman coach for the last 3 years. It was incredibly valuable to work with Coach Stallworth and see how he did things and learn about the high school game, said Schetzel. Coach Schetzel is very excited to see how the team does in 5A for the second year in a row, but knows the challenges that moving up from 4A presents. The one thing about 5A is the teams are better, said Schetzel. They're better, they have more depth, the coaches really do a good job, and they'll exploit a lot of your weaknesses. Luckily for Yuma Catholic, a lot of their best playmakers are returning to the team for 2026. On the offensive side of the ball, senior wide receiver Brody Amon and senior quarterback Scout Reese are looking like they will be a star duo for the team. Amon, the Shamrocks' leading receiver last season, with 912 yards and 12 touchdowns, has set a goal for himself to be first-team All-State this season, after being named second-team last year. Amon is going to need help from Reese to do so, who the receiver has a lot of praise for. Scout is awesome, just great, Amon said. He's been doing really well consistently, and he's been doing well with the other receivers, too. Reese, who is replacing former Yuma Catholic quarterback Nash Ott, is excited to see where the team can go this season. Reese believes the entire squad has shown they are dedicated to winning and improving their games this season. We're very disciplined. We work very hard, Reese said. We're focused and we want to win. That's the biggest thing. On the defensive side of the ball, the Shamrocks have to replace some of their biggest impact players from last season, such as linebacker Saheed Verdugo, who led Yuma Catholic in sacks last season. Verdugo is not easy to replace, with Coach Schetzel saying he was a real hard worker and played with a high motor. But the Shamrocks believe they have several guys who have a high level of grit and a similar motor to Verdugo, who can make up for the losses on defense this season. Senior defensive end Matt St. Pierre and senior linebacker Max Orozco are two guys who are looking to be the difference on defense for the Shamrocks. St. Pierre, who recorded 1.5 sacks and 25 total tackles last season, is making a big emphasis on proving his ability to get to the quarterback this year. I've been working on a lot of pass rushing, St. Pierre said. I feel like I got my run defense down. So just pass rushing and getting to the quarterback, getting some pressure on the quarterback. Orozco, who was second on the team in tackles last season with 88, was mostly focused on defense in 2025, but will also have his fair share of snaps at tight end this season as well. Orozco is excited by what the linebacker group brings this year. We're all just hard workers. We push each other every day at practice, and we just get after it every day, said Orozco. The Shamrocks opened their season at home against Notre Dame Prep, who beat them 28-14 last year on August 28th. The team is looking to avenge the losses they suffered in their first four games last season against Notre Dame Prep, Holtville on September 4th, Marana September 11th, and Verado September 18th. Marana in week three, who the Shamrocks lost to twice last year, is who Orozco is most looking forward to face this season. We're going to be ready, said Orozco. Schetzel is most looking forward to the Shamrocks' first region game, which will be at home against Fairfax on September 25th. The Shamrocks won the matchup last year by forfeit, which was their first win of the year. My second sports article today, Schools Hitting the Links. This article is from Tuesday. Gila Ridge boys golf shot a 160 to defeat the Cibola Raiders, who shot a 212 Monday morning at Desert Hills. Jacob Callinger was the medalist with a 2-over par with a 38 score over 9 holes. Grady Ebert placed second with a score of 3-over par, with the number of strokes being 39. Carter Goodwin, with 5-over par, scored 41. Trevor Campbell, with 6-over, scored 42. And Trent Cottle, with 7-over par, scored 43, to round out the scores for the 5 Hawks. On Tuesday, 3 young ladies from COFA High School finished the course. The field was led by COFA's dynamic duo of Jacqueline Smith and Kaylani Negret. Smith led the way with a final score of 44, followed closely by Negret with a 50. Yuma High's enthusiastic newcomer freshman Marisol Villapando maintained the pace of play with the top girls and finished with an 85 for her third round ever. Villapando picked up clubs for the first time 3 weeks ago, and as her coach, I am very proud of her dedication and progress, said Yuma High School girls coach Tish Malone. Moving now to state news, this is from Tuesday from Howard Fisher Capital Media Services. The contenders for governor are hoping to sway voters in what is expected to be a close race by portraying the other as soft on crime when it comes to protecting victims, and children in particular. But the record about what has become exhibit number one for Katie Hobbs' claim that Andy Biggs is unfit for governor may not be as clear as the incumbent is claiming. Hobbs has made a point of attacking Biggs over 2013 legislation in Arizona, which would have allowed the state to disband the police department in the polygamous community of Colorado City, amid allegations that its officers were taking their orders from the fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. That measure, backed by then-Attorney General Tom Horn, a Republican, was approved by the House by a 52-7 margin, but it died in the Senate, where Biggs was president. Andy Biggs has a really disturbing pattern of protecting pedophiles, Hobbs said this past week, referring to allegations that the police department in Colorado City was ignoring reports that FLDS church members were entering into plural marriages with girls as young as 9. The governor said the legislation, sponsored by then-Rep. Michelle Ugente Rita, a Scottsdale Republican, would have reined in the pedophile cult in Colorado City that was abusing women and children, forcing children into marriage, but was blocked by Big. It took more than another 2 years before the U.S. Department of Justice stepped in with a lawsuit against both Colorado City and its twin border city of Hilldale, Utah, over its practices of police misconduct. A federal judge ordered new oversight into not just the police department, but municipal practices of denying housing to non-FLDS members. There is no question that Biggs was opposed to the legislation. He told Capital Media Services this past week that he believed it was poorly crafted, citing opposition to it by the Fraternal Order of Police. Still, there is nothing on the record showing that Biggs was personally responsible for bearing the legislation. What the record does show, however, is that after the measure was approved by the House, it went to the Senate. And there, Biggs used his power as Senate president to assign it to two committees for hearings. That double assigning move was unusual at the time for the Senate. Most bills needed review by just one committee, the exception being anything that required an appropriation of public funds. What it does mean, though, is that any bill doubly assigned needs to be approved by both committees, creating a second hurdle and a second place where a bill can die. But it didn't even get that far. The first assignment was to the Public Safety Committee, but Chester Crandall, who chaired the panel, did not even give it a hearing. Crandall told Capital Media Services at the time it was his decision to quash the measure. He said he was not convinced that it was a realistic solution to the problem of things like police enforcing church discipline, including going after women who flee polygamous marriages. Anyway, he said, seizing control of the police department provided only a temporary solution. Biggs said he does not recall whether he had any particular conversation with Crandall about whether he should give the measure a hearing. Crandall died in 2014. Eugente Rita, currently a candidate for the Scottsdale City Council, declined to discuss the issue. But she made it clear a decade ago, when Biggs first ran for Congress, that she believes he was the force behind the death of not just her legislation about Colorado City, but in holding a grudge over her very visible push for its passage. After I came up with a viable solution to deal with the systemic corruption in Colorado City, Biggs treated me so bad I couldn't represent my constituents the way I wanted to, she told the Arizona Republic. I don't remember anything about this particular issue, Biggs said when asked about his discussion with Eugente Rita about the Colorado City legislation. And any actions he took to undermine her other bills? I'm not going to disclose what we talked about on other issues, Biggs said. I think that those are private conversations. But Eugente Rita, in her 2016 comments to the Republic, said the death of her House passed legislation in the Senate had profound effects. Women and children suffered 3 years longer than they should have because he protected the bad guys, she said, noting it took that long for the Department of Justice to intervene. That's what bothers me. She isn't the only one who took aim at Biggs. In a 2016 email to constituents, Representative Kelly Townsend told of Biggs' reaction after she had gone on the radio in 2013 to express her frustration about the death of Eugente Rita's proposal. The rest of my bills died that season, Townsend wrote, something she blamed on Biggs, who had the power as Senate president to quash measures he did not like. She said that Biggs later admitted to her he was angry with her, and I should never have gone on the radio to discuss the issue in the first place. Townsend declined to discuss the issue now. In opposing the legislation and what he may or may not have done to kill it, Biggs aligned himself with a small group of House lawmakers who voted against the bill. And I'm running out of time. Bye. Wall Street Journal is next. See you next week.